for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. A Richmond judge says that the city's Lee statue will stand for now until he issues a written opinion. Harrisonburg's Housing Authority employs federal stimulus money in a new campaign for renters. And people recovering from addiction often rely on group meetings or therapy sessions for support in recovery. So how are they dealing with pandemic-related social restrictions? It's the next story in our Mental Health Matters series. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, July 24. A Richmond judge says that the city's Lee statue will stand for now until he issues a written opinion. The judge heard arguments Thursday in a lawsuit over Governor Ralph Northam's plans to remove the enormous statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. Attorney General Mark Herring's office asked the court to dismiss the lawsuit and dissolve an existing injunction barring the removal of the statue, which rests on state property. The Lee Monument is the only Confederate statue that remains on Monument Avenue. Statues of other Confederate figures on city property in Richmond have been removed in recent weeks after massive protests over the police killing of George Floyd and many other Black Americans. A monument to Confederate General Robert E. Lee that was set to be removed from downtown Roanoke was toppled late Wednesday night. The city said Thursday that just before midnight, a police officer driving near Roanoke City Hall noticed the monument lying on its side, broken into two pieces. Earlier this spring, Virginia lawmakers passed a bill allowing local governments to decide the fate of such monuments. Under the new law, the council needed to give a month's notice of a public hearing on the removal, which was set for August 17th. City Manager Bob Cowell said the damaged monument was placed in storage for the time being. A high school in Springfield will no longer be named after General Robert E. Lee. Instead, it will be named after late U.S. Representative John Lewis, who died last week after a battle with cancer. The Fairfax County School Board approved the new name on Thursday. The board had already voted unanimously last month to remove Lee's name. It adopted John R. Lewis as the new name after numerous people spoke in favor of the change at a public hearing. Advocates say Black Virginians with certain hairstyles such as braids and weaves have faced prejudice everywhere from schools to nightclubs. A new state law aims to end that by adding hairstyles to the broader category of racial discrimination. Consultant Ajua B. Asamoah has led a national push for similar laws. Asamoah spoke at a ceremonial bill signing on Thursday.
People have been fired. They have been passed over for promotions. They have had offers of employment rescinded. This impacts the upward mobility of Black people.
The bill had unanimous support in the Senate. 26 Republicans in the House voted against the measure. Harrisonburg's Housing Authority is using federal stimulus money in a new campaign for renters. Households with low-income, elderly, or disabled residents can apply. But during a pandemic-related eviction crisis, the trick is getting landlords to sign on. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
The Harrisonburg Redevelopment and Housing Authority's 100 Families, 100 Days campaign aims to help those who have vouchers but need a lease find housing by September 30th.
Under the best of circumstances, finding landlords who accept vouchers can be a challenge. And with the pandemic, it's made it extra challenging. And so once we came back to work and we were able to access some federal money through the CARES Act, we looked at how could we best market our program to landlords and highlight the families that we're trying to help.
Liz Webb is the Housing Choice Voucher Manager at the HRHA. They still have close to 100 vouchers in the hands of people who haven't found a place to rent. One barrier, Webb said, is the misconception that landlords who rent to voucher holders don't have as much control over who their tenants are.
The landlords will screen households and decide who's going to make a good tenant for them. You know, they can enforce their lease.
Another problem is the lack of affordable single-bedroom units available in the Harrisonburg area. Many of the voucher holders are single adults or couples, but once the clients do find a place to live, they stay there for an average of more than 4 years.
They're people who already live here. They're already your neighbors. They're already people that you see at the supermarket. Their kids go to school here. These are community members already. They just need a little help.
Interested landlords should check out their website at harrisonburgrha.com or call 540-434-7386. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
When lawmakers meet in Richmond for a special session next month, will they convene in person or virtually? The Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
It's 2020, a year that at least sounds kind of futuristic. People are having virtual classes and even virtual happy hours. So why not a virtual session of the Virginia General Assembly? Delegate Sia Price is a Democrat from Newport News, and she says it's time for the oldest legislative body in the Western Hemisphere to join the 21st century.
So it's not like impossible. It is totally possible in 2020 when you're trying to keep 140 people safe plus their staff, plus the clerk staff. It just seems like the most reasonable route to go.
Is it really all that reasonable? Some people on the other side of the Capitol aren't so sure.
I'm pretty sure we're going to be there.
Senate Majority Leader Dick Saslaw says the Senate's experience meeting in the Science Museum of Virginia earlier this year was a success, proof positive that lawmakers can meet in person and practice social distancing while conducting legislative business.
I don't see that as a problem. You're spaced out. We were at least 15 feet from the next nearest person, not six. We were about 10, 15 feet.
The question of virtual meetings isn't just about having the technology to make it happen, or even the legal authority to pull it off. For many lawmakers, the real stumbling block is setting a precedent for the future. I'm Michael Pope.
Finally today, how have treatments for addiction, especially the all-important group therapy sessions, been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic? In the next installment of WMRA's special series on mental health matters, Jesse Nadler reports.
For an addict, it is incredibly difficult to make the first step toward getting clean.
They just get to the point where they're kind of half suicidal all the time.
Dr. Kirk Luder is a psychiatrist at Washington and Lee. He's also involved with the Rockbridge Area Community Services Board, where he treats patients suffering from opioid dependence.
You know, they know they could die at any point, but they almost don't care. You know, that's the state that I often see people when they're coming in for opiate dependence.
Now add to that half-suicidal mentality all the possible effects of a pandemic: job loss, family stress, social isolation, a potentially disrupted supply chain. It can make an already challenging situation seem impossible. And yet, since the crisis started, Luder says they've had a big influx of people with opiate dependence coming in for help.
They hate who they are when they're using, and they want to kind of reclaim the sense of morality and reliability and so forth. And that's really what, you know, one of the things that's really motivating for them.
But the pandemic makes it really easy for this already vulnerable population to fall through the cracks. Because here's the thing about recovery, and this is a famous quote in the recovery world: the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection.
It's very widely recognized that social support is easily the number one factor in successful treatment of a substance use disorder.
Addiction is compulsive behavior. Compulsive behavior thrives in isolation or in an embedded drug subculture.
I hear all the time from patients that say, I don't know anybody who doesn't use. Trying to move from that into a new subculture, new friendships, new supports, and so forth, of people that don't use, you know, that's absolutely essential. But we're in the situation where we're basically prohibited from developing new relationships.
Face-to-face meetings had to be canceled. The all-important group meetings, where people get to share their stories with those also in recovery, were shelved.
I pretty much count on my counselor and my therapist, and I have very few friends, but if that's what it has to take, then that's what it is.
Amanda Tomlin has been in recovery from opioid use disorder for the past 7 years.
In the addiction world, you have no friends. You have addiction buddies.
When the pandemic hit and she found out she couldn't go in for the all-important group sessions at the Rockbridge Area Health Center, she was afraid.
You know, it was panic mode. I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels this way. It's basically my little family, you know?
Tomlin was told she had to transition to online support. And as most people in our world of Zoom know, there were glitches, communication breakdowns, people who can't figure out how to turn on their microphones. Inconvenient? Yes. But for those with opioid use disorder, it could spell the difference between hanging in there and giving up. The team at the Rockbridge Area Health Center understood this and knew they had to act fast to make sure patients, especially new patients trying to make that critical first step, got the services and support they need. the entire program had to be restructured. Here's mental health clinician Molly Pallavicini.
It has not been easy. We make a coordinated effort. I speak to them or see them once a week. The substance use care coordinator talks to them at least once a week, and these are on separate days.
Medical appointments for Suboxone were conducted online. Patients also receive regular check-in calls and texts from a trained peer mentor, someone further along in their recovery. The goal is constant connection.
We wrap them around with many services.
Pallavicini started seeing patients face-to-face, or rather face mask to face mask, back in June. Medical visits can be conducted in person now, too, if the patient chooses. But the all-important group meetings, they're still a ways off. Here's Tomlin again.
They have made a point to stay in touch and reach out to us, even if we don't want them to.
Rockbridge Area Health Center has helped Tomlin learn how to navigate setbacks and triggers. But patients just starting the program, she knows the battle they face.
You know, and those are the ones that I pray for because they made the first step.
But she's living proof it can be done.
I went from someone who was losing everything they had to getting ready to buy a home.
Oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah. As hard as it was, as much as I was on, anyone can do it if they have their mind set on it. If they're really wanting to get themselves clean, they can do it.
Organizations like the Rockbridge Area Community Services Board and Rockbridge Area Health Center are there to help. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
You'll find links to resources and more information on this story on the WMRA app or at WMRA.org. Next week, our series focuses on the task of suicide prevention during this pandemic crisis. Support for our Mental Health Matters series comes from WMRA's News and Information Fund. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. As George Carlin said, thanks for the use of your head. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Friday.